And right now, ladies and gentlemen, we bring you something new in modern music.
Chicago way. He had a boogie style that no one else could play. He was the top man at his craft. But then his number came up and he was gone with the draft. He's in the army now, a blowing reveille. He's the boogie-woogie bugle boy of Company B. They made him blow a bugle for his Uncle Sam. It really brought him down because he couldn't jam. The captain seemed to understand, because the next day the cap went out and drafted a band. And now the company jumps when he plays reveille. He's the boogie-woogie bugle boy of Company B. A toot, a toot, a toot-de-la-da-toot, he blows it A to the bar. In boogie rhythm, he can't blow a note unless the bass and guitar is playing with him. He makes a company jump when he plays reveille. He's the boogie-woogie bugle boy of Company B. He was a boogie-woogie bugle boy of Company B. Plays boogie woogie bugle, he was busy as a buzz bee. And when he plays, he makes the company jump A to the bar. He's a boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. Do 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 da da do da da do do. He blows it A to the bar. He can't blow a note if the bass and guitar isn't with him. And the company jumps when he plays reveille. He's a boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. Boogie every night and wakes them up the same way in the early bright. They clap their hands and stamp their feet because they know how he plays when someone gives him a beat. He really breaks it up when he plays reveille. He's the boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. Da, da.
This is Great Songs About Nothing Good on WMFO in Medford. I'm Greg Sapot, and that was one of my grandfather's favorite songs, the Andrews Sisters with the Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy. Of course, things have changed today. There is no more draft, so in modern times, the Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy would have to sign up for selective service before he graduated from high school so he could get federal financial aid to, I don't know, Berkeley? But like most of Berkeley's most famous students, he would probably drop out. And up next, well, first let me explain to you where I am this week. I am not in Medford, where I usually pilot this ship. I am on vacation. I think I've earned it. Who are you to judge me? And if you want to know where I am, I'll just say I am in the sleepy west of the woody east. And that's the Strokes with Soma off of their debut album, Is This It?, which is years old. And we'll send that one out to my good friend of many years, Matt Baskin. Before that, Norma Fraser and her cover of The First Cut Is the Deepest, a song originally by Cat Stevens. And at the start, Pixies, UMass, from their final album with the classic lineup, Trompe Le Monde. And up next, I'm going to play a single, A-side and B-side, by Sean Nelson, former lead singer of Harvey Danger. I'll be playing the titular A-side, and the B-side is a sort of a Tejano reimagining of the lead-off track to the debut Harvey Danger album, Where Have All the Merrymakers Gone? And then afterwards, I'll throw some Carlos Puebla your way, because it keeps in with the sound. Anyway, here are two from the one, the only, the worth your time knowing about, Sean Nelson.
There's no such thing as a long-distance relationship, just the nebulous time between pretending it is and admitting it isn't worth it. I'm sorry I said I wish we'd never met. I know you'll never forgive, but if memory serves, you'll soon we
100% con casas de apartamentos y echar al pueblo a sufrir y seguir de modo cruel contra el pueblo conspirando para seguirlo explotando y en eso llegó Fidel y se acabó la diversión, llegó el comandante y mandó a parar y se acabó la diversión, llegó el comandante y mandó a parar. Aquí pensaban seguir tragando y tragando tierra sin sospechar que en la sierra se alumbraba el porvenir y seguir de modo cruel la costumbre del delito, hacer de Cuba un garito y en eso llegó Fidel. Y se acabó la diversión, llegó el comandante y mandó a parar. Y se acabó la diversión, llegó el comandante y mandó a parar. Aquí pensaban seguir diciendo que los cuatreros forajidos bandoleros asolaban al país y seguir de modo cruel con la infamia por escudo difamando a los barbudos y en eso llegó Fidel y se acabó la diversión, llegó el comandante y mandó a parar y se acabó la diversión, llegó el comandante y mandó a parar. Aquí pensaban seguir jugando a la democracia y el pueblo que en su desgracia se acabara de morir y seguir de modo cruel sin cuidarse ni la forma con el robo como norma y en eso llegó Fidel y se acabó la diversión, llegó el comandante y mandó a parar y se acabó la diversión, llegó el comandante y mandó a parar.
The great Carlos Puebla and his backing band Los Tradicionales, and the song was Y en eso llegó Fidel. Before that, we had two by Sean Nelson, former lead singer of Harvey Danger. The A-side to the single he released last year was called Viral Love, and the B-side was Carlota Valdez, Texas version, a Tejano reimagining of the lead-off track to Harvey Danger's first album, and that song was, of course, well, Carlota Valdez. And before we get into our next oddball series, we're going to throw something that we can all rely on. It's a legally mandated PSA.
A social distancing tip.
While the CDC urges you to avoid close contact, like hugging or shaking hands, there are other non-physical ways to say hello. Wave, wink, use sign language, salute, smile, give the peace sign, throw up an air high five, do jazz hands. Remember, stay a minimum of 6 feet or 2 arms length away from others and stay home if you can. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Next in our rhythm roundup, we're going to have a nice long one by the Velvet Underground. It's from their second album, White Light, White Heat. It's a short story written by Lou Reed and narrated by John Cale. But it's a wild story, one that you'll want to sit down for. And to facilitate the process, we're bookending it with, on the back end, we're going to have Randy Newman. And on the front end, we have a lo-fi classic from 1971 by the late, great Karen Dalton.
Jeffers had reached his limit. It was now mid-August. Jumenti had been separated from Marsha for more than 2 months. 2 months, and all he had to show were 3 dog-eared letters and 2 very expensive long-distance phone calls. True, when school had ended and she'd returned to Wisconsin, due to Locust, Pennsylvania, she had sworn to maintain a certain fidelity. She would date occasionally, but merely as amusement. She would remain faithful. But lately, Waldo had begun to worry. He'd had trouble sleeping at nights. And when he did, he had horrible dreams. He lay awake at night, tossing and turning underneath his pleated quilt protector, tears welling in his eyes as he pictured Marsha, her her sworn vows overcome by liquor and the smooth soothings of some Neanderthal, finally submitting to the final caresses of sexual oblivion. It was more than the human mind could bear. Visions of Marsha's faithlessness haunted him. Daytime fantasies of sexual abandon permeated his thoughts. And the thing was, they wouldn't understand how she really was. He, Waldo, alone understood this. He had intuitively grasped every nook and cranny of her psyche. He'd made her smile. She needed him. He wasn't there. The idea came to him on the Thursday before the Mama's parade was scheduled to appear. He just finished mowing and edging the Adelson's lawn for $1.50, and I checked the mailbox to see if there was at least a word in Marsha. There was nothing but a circular from the Amalgamated Aluminum Company of America inquiring into his own needs. At least they cared enough to write. There's a New York company. You could go anywhere in the mails. Then it struck him. He didn't have enough money to go to Wisconsin in the accepted fashion, true. But why not mail himself? It was absurd. He would ship himself parcel post special delivery. The next day, Waldo went to the supermarket to purchase the necessary equipment. He bought masking tape for a staple gun and a medium-sized cardboard box just right for a person of his build. He judged that with a minimum of jostling, he could ride quite comfortably. A few air holes, some water, a husband made snacks, and it would probably be as good as going tourist. By Friday afternoon, Waldo was set. He was thoroughly packed, and the post office had agreed to pick him up at 3 o'clock. He'd marked the package fragile, and as he sat curled up inside, resting on a foam rubber cushioning in the trough of the unit, he tried to picture the look of awe and happiness on Marsha's face as she opened the door, saw the package, tipped the deliverer, and then opened it to see her Waldo finally there in person. She would kiss him, and then maybe they could see a movie. If he'd only thought of this before. Suddenly, rough hands gripped to the package, and he felt himself borne up. He landed with a thud in a truck and was off. Marsha Bronson had just finished setting her hair. It had been a very rough weekend. She had to remember not to drink like that. Bill had been nice about it, though. After it was over, he said he still respected her, and after all, it was certainly the way of nature, and even though, no, he didn't love her, he did feel an affection for her. And after all, they were grown adults. Oh, what Bill could teach Waldo. But that seemed many years ago. Sheila Klein, her very, very best friend, walked in through the porch screen door and into the kitchen. Oh God, it's absolutely maudlin outside. Ugh, I know what you mean. I feel all the heat. Marsha tightened the belt on her cotton robe with the silk outer edge. Sheila ran her finger over some salt grains on the kitchen table, licked her finger and made a face. I'm supposed to be taking these salt pills, but she winked, who knows. They make me feel like throwing up. Marsha started to pat herself on the chin, an exercise she'd seen on television. God, don't even talk about that. She got up from the table and went to the sink where she picked up a bottle of pink and blue vitamins. Want one? Supposed to be better than steak. And then attempted to touch her nose. I don't think I'll ever touch a daiquiri again. She gave up and sat down, this time near to the small table that supported the telephone. Maybe Bill will call, she said to Sheila's glass. Sheila nibbled on the cookie. After last night, I thought maybe you'd be through with him. I know what you mean. My God, he's like an octopus, hands all over the place. She gestured, raising her arms upward in defense. The thing is, after a while, you get tired of fighting with him, you know. And after all, I didn't really do anything Friday and Saturday, so I kind of owed it to him. You know what I mean. She started to scratch. Sheila was giggling with her hand over her mouth. I tell you, I felt the same way. And even after a while, she bent forward and whispered, I wanted to. Now she was laughing very loudly. It was at this point that Mr. Jameson of the Clarence Darrow Post Office rang the doorbell of the large sticker-covered frame house. When Marsha Bronson opened the door, he helped her carry the package in. He had his yellow and his green slips of paper signed and left with a 15-cent tip that Marsha had gotten out of her mother's small beige pocketbook in the den. What do you think it is? Sheila asked. Marsha stood with her arms folded behind her back. She stared at the brown cardboard carton that sat in the middle of the room. I don't know. Inside the package, Waldo quivered with excitement as he received a number of voices. Sheila ran her fingernail over the mouth. basket tape that's lying on the center of the carpet. Why don't you look at the return address and see who it's from? Waldo felt his heart beating. He could feel the vibrating footsteps. It would be soon. Marcia walked around the carton and read the ink-scratched label. Oh, God, it's from Waldo. That schmuck, said Sheila. Waldo trembled with expectation. Well, you might as well open it, said Sheila. Both of them tried to lift the staple flap. You must have nailed it shut. They tugged on the flap again. My God, you need a power drill to get this thing open. They pulled again. Can't get a grip. They both stood still, breathing heavily. Why don't you get a scissor, said she. Marcia ran into the kitchen, but all she could find was a little sewing scissor. Then she remembered that her father kept a collection of tools in the basement. She ran downstairs, and when she came back up, she had a large sheet metal cutter in her hand. This is the best I could find, she told her friend. Here, you do it. I'm gonna die. She sank into a large fluffy couch and exhaled noisily. Sheila tried to make a slit between the masking tape and the end of the cardboard flap. The blade was too big and there wasn't enough room. God damn this thing, she said, feeling very exasperated. Then smiling, I got an idea. What, said Marcia. Just watch, said Sheila, touching her finger to her head. Inside the package, Waldo was so transfixed with excitement that he barely breathed. His skin fell quickly from the heat, and he could feel his heart beating in his throat. It would be soon. Sheila stood quite upright and walked around to the other side of the package. Then she sank down to her knees, grasped the cutter by both handles, took a deep breath, and plunged the long blade through the middle of the package, through the masking tape, through the cardboard, through the cushioning, and right through the center of Waldo Jeffers' hem, which split slightly and caused little rhythmic arcs of red to pulsate gently in the morning sun.
Freshmen in New Orleans, in New Orleans there are freshmen everywhere. Your house could fall down, your baby could drown. Wouldn't one of those freshmen care? Everybody gather round, loosen up your suspenders, hunker down on the ground. I'm a cracker, you want to, don't take good care of you. Who built the highway to Baton Rouge? Who put up the hospital and built your school? Who looked after shit kickers like you, the kingfish do? Here come the kingfish, kingfish. Everybody sang as the kingfish, kingfish. Every man a king who took on the stand at all men and whipped ass. Yes, the kingfish, the kingfish. Friend of the working man, the kingfish, the kingfish. The kingfish gon' save this land.
one of America's greatest lyricists, Randy Newman, with Kingfish from the Good Old Boys album, a song about Huey Long, the senator, governor, and all-around fixer of Louisiana in the Depression era. Before that was the Velvet Underground with The Gift, the lamentable story of Waldo Jeffers, written by Lou Reed, narrated by John Cale, and featured on their second album, White Light, White Heat. And at the start, Karen Dalton, Something on Your Mind. And we're going into the far turn here on Great Songs About Nothing Good. And we're going to keep the rhythm consistent and start it off with a real uplifting number by Devo.
Disco casino, the freedom fight. the hillsides ring with free the people. Or can I hear the echoes from the days of 39? Churches full of poets, ragged army, fixing bayonets to fight the other lies. Spanish bombs rock the province. I'm hearing music from another time. Spanish bombs cause the problem. I'm flying in on a DC-10 tonight.
Spanish bombs,
you're the quiero y bonito.
When the room is spinning and the words aren't sticking, and the radio's on a better runaway model with a face like sin and a heart like a James Joyce novel, saying sister, sister, how I missed you, missed you. Let's go wrist to wrist and take the skin off of a blister. If you're a rock star, porn star, superstar, doesn't matter what you are, get yourself a good car, get out of here. Well, put the boys in the better land. You're always talking about the boys in the better land. The boys in the better land. Put the boys in the better land. You're always talking about the boys in the better land. The boys in the better land. Driver's got names to fill two double barrels. He spits out, breathes out, only smokes carols. And he's refreshing the world in mind, body and spirit. Mind, body and spirit. You better hear it and fear it. Ah, oh, that's the spirit. Saying sister, sister, how I missed you, missed you. Let's go wrist to wrist and take the skin off of a blister. If you're a rock star, porn star, superstar, doesn't matter what you are, get yourself a good car, get out of here. Yeah. Put the boys in the better land. You're always talking about the boys in the better land. The boys in the better land. But the boys in the better land. You're always talking about the boys in the better land. The boys in the better land. Got names to fill two double barrels. He spits out, breathes out, only smokes carols. And he's refreshing the world in mind, body and spirit. Mind, body and spirit. You better hear it and fear it. Ah, that's the spirit.
crystal sister. How I missed you, let's go wrist to wrist. So take the skin off, I'm with blister. If you're a rock star, porn star, superstar, doesn't matter what you add, get yourself a good car, get out of here. Yeah. Put the boys in the better land. You're always talking about the boys in the better land. The boys in the better land. Put the boys in the better land. You're always talking about those boys in the better land. The boys in the better land.
Say goodnight.
Wings with Goodnight Tonight, and before that was Fontaine's DC, Boys in a Better Land, The Clash, Spanish Bombs, and Devo, Beautiful World, and That's All You Get. I'm back in God's Country next week, and for now, good night, and good riddance on WMFO in Medford.
Due to COVID-19, WMFO DJs are pre-recording their shows for broadcast on air. We can still accept phone calls, but the phone line is in voicemail mode. Call 855-915-9636 and be sure to leave the DJ's name in the voicemail so we can forward it to the correct person. The following program was recorded earlier. Enjoy.